Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
I'm Denise.
I'm Martin.
And we're back with the film show. The film show again for you this week.
Yes, just about. I think this time yesterday we had nothing.
Well, we had a bit.
We were looking for very long pieces of music.
We had a busy week, didn't we, with other things other than film.
Yes, unbelievably.
Yeah, but they all led back to film.
And, you know, as you always say, it always takes, you think, this show isn't going to work. And then magically everything comes together. People die.
People
announcements
die.
Are made about new films. And we go to the pictures and we're able to do a couple of reviews.
Yeah.
So. Right, so some bits of news. George Lucas is re-releasing Phantom Menace in a 25th anniversary version. I cannot tell you how little I care about this.
Oh, wait. I knew it was coming out for a 25th anniversary. Mm. So he's been tinkering again, has he?
Well, George is now, I think, he's now got the ability to use the special effects that, you know, he's going to make it how he always wanted it to be.
I can't keep
up. If those special effects allow him to erase Jar Jar Binks from all of it. I mean, let's face it, everybody hates this film.
Oh, not everybody. Come on. There are kids. There are people now who were kids when it came out. That loved it.
Yeah, but
they didn't care about the 70s, 80s.
But no, but that's it. They're the people who call Star Wars A New Hope. And I really don't like those people.
Do you think, like, maybe... So George Lucas is getting an honorary Palme d'Or at this year's Cannes.
Is he?
Maybe it's for The Phantom Menace.
It probably is. You know, or for his contribution to cinema, which is, you know, if it was for THX 1138 and American Graffiti, you'd say, yeah, you know. But for the disaster that he's turned Hollywood cinema into, no.
I must admit, I don't think I did go and see Phantom Menace at the time. I didn't see anything after that.
I didn't see anything after that until, like, the final three. I saw those.
Did you watch Spaced, the TV series?
Yes.
Where Simon Pegg's character is so, so destroyed by the Phantom Menace that he burns all of his Star Wars memorabilia.
But the thing that really, really annoys me with Lucas is his constant going back and revising the special effects. And he's done this on the first three, which are Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back and Revenge of the Teddy Bears, isn't it? Yeah, just leave it.
Yeah.
There's something good about seeing it. You can say, well, you can see how the special effects have actually
I don't think there's
evolved.
Anyone in George Lucas's life, though, that can say, just leave it to him and he'll listen.
Well, short little guy, short people. He's got a chip on his shoulder.
So you're not rushing out to see The Phantom Menace.
I'm not. But... I'm not. So there was a couple of minutes there we filled with totally irrelevant chatter.
Well, I think we're going to disagree about the next thing we're going to talk about, because I'm quite excited by this and I'm not sure how you feel. But
you do your bit first.
So 28 years later, cast announcement for that. Well, it's not a cast announcement, is it? It's a cast...
Well, they're announcing it.
So Mr. Ralphie Fiennes, one of my favourites, is in it. We don't know who or what they're playing. We don't know anything about the storyline for it yet. But Jodie Comer as well.
Yep.
Fantastic actress. Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Oh, thanks.
No, not your favourite either. But, you know, he might get zombified quite early on. You know,
the only thing I was saying about it, they've announced this cast and there's not... None of it has been filmed yet. Yeah. It's a long way from going in front of the camera.
Isn't Alex Garland still writing it?
I think he is. And there's some talk of it that they're going to film two sequels back to back. And whether or not that cast that's been announced are in both films, or let's face it, so many people drop out from initial casting announcements.
I loved this
post might be as irrelevant as George Lucas.
The announcement in like some papers like the Metro were like, you may know this guy from Ralph Fiennes, a 40-year theatrical career, 30 years in the movies, massive, massive actor, Harry Potter star Ralph Fiennes cast in.
Could I just say here, that why on earth are we quoting things from the Metro? Have we got no self-respect?
I mean.
No, I don't
you
know what
mean.
You mean.
The clickbait stuff that comes up when the news comes
There's
up.
There's a time when you've got to walk away from that and say that that's not something I need to know. Or go, oh, was Ralph Fiennes in Harry Potter?
Yeah, this was like it was at uni. Martin always criticising your sources.
Exactly. This is
don't
not...
just look it up on Wikipedia. Yeah,
no.
Well, I'm interested to see what else comes out from that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
It's quite exciting. It's Danny Boyle again.
There you go. There was a strange thing I saw in the press today. That Emma Stone, her real name is Emily, and she had to register with the Screen Actors Guild as Emma Stone because there was already an Emily Stone registered with them.
That must happen quite a lot, I reckon.
It probably does, yeah. But I think it was Stuart Granger, whose real name was James Stewart, I think.
Ah, so there was...
Something like that. And there's probably been loads and loads of other ones. But people have been saying that when she's on set and that, in normal life, people call her Emily. So it's she only uses Emma in a professional capacity.
Oh.
Now, whether she's waiting for the other Emily Stone to die, and then she can change her name back to her real name.
Yeah, well, I've got a friend who's an actor, and her surname was used already.
Yeah.
So she had to pick another surname. She went with her same forename.
What would you pick? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Ooh.
We'll come back to that.
I'd keep Denise.
Denise, yeah.
Maybe I'd be Denise Monroe.
Denise Cougar Mellencamp.
Oh, no.
Oh, There's a team of writers pouring this stuff out for us.
That's never going to come up for me.
No. A bit of controversial news, which hit the headlines about Hollywood producer.
Grim, isn't it?
It is. This Harvey Weinstein, who he's been convicted in two court cases for rape, one in San Francisco and one in New York, and the New York courts apparently have accepted his appeal on the rape case.
This is so.
Now it looks as though he's going to be retried, so that will come back to court. So he'll have to dust off that walking frame that he used so ridiculously in his cases. But this sends out a really bad message, I think. Apparently, the appeal was based on the fact that the judge in the New York case allowed a number of women who had been assaulted, harassed, molested by him to give evidence when they weren't actually part of the case.
Mm.
And the prosecution was building up a pattern of behaviour for him. So,
the way I read it is because we were too many.
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Absolutely abysmal.
So,
oh God, that makes my whole body shiver thinking about. Ugh.
And to end things on,
moving swiftly on,
Laurent Cantet. Who says May May, and we can hear it from here.
Hello, May May.
If you want to come back on the show at any time, do that. Or just sit at home listening. yes, Laurent Cantet passed away this week. The French director, probably most famous for his film from, I think, about 2008, The Class, which was like a semi-documentary feature film, a bit of both, with a totally non-professional cast of pupils and teachers giving you this view of the French education system, following a class through a term.
I never saw that, but I remember seeing it looked fascinating.
It was really good. And it actually won the Palme d'Or at Cannes that year. And he's made a series of films before and since, mostly about different aspects of French society, which have all been highly regarded. As it is with some directors, not many of these films have made it across the channel, let's say, or to English-speaking audiences. But it's a sad loss. He was a really, really good director.
And he was in his 60s, I think. He wasn't
63,
old,
I think he was, yeah.
Well,
it's got me worried.
Oh. Well,
I'm older than that. Unbelievably so.
I'm older than I ever intended to be.
Okay, let's have to.
Well, talking of age, talking of age and anniversaries. So it was your birthday last week.
I know.
It's my birthday next week. And somehow, Shell will be at home wondering how on earth this has happened.
I'm wondering myself.
But I've managed to squeeze in show tunes to the show this week. But the theme is, it's not show tunes, it is birthdays. So it's your birthday. So a few significant birthdays came up, and one of them is Ms. Barbra Streisand, who is a young pup at 82, her birthday this week. So we are going to celebrate a bit of Babs.
Sorry,
with...
you're going to celebrate a bit
of Babs. Martin's going to die in the corner. I'll be ringing the bell for him next. But Martin, don't rain on my parade.
To live, just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. Don't tell me not to fly, I simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? I'll march my band out, I'll beat my drum, and if I'm found out, at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hat, So I guess I didn't make it, but whether I'm the rose of sheer perfection, a freckle on the nose of life's complexion, the cinder or the shiny apple of its eye, I gotta fly once, I gotta try once, only can die once. Right, sir. Ooh, life is juicy, juicy, and you see I gonna have my bite, sir. Get ready for me, love, cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march, my heart's a drummer. Don't bring around a cloud of rain on my parade. I'm gonna live and live now. Get what I want, I know how. One roll for the whole shebang. Hey, Mr. Onstein, here I am. I'll march my band out. I'll beat my drum. And if I'm fanned out, you turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hat, sir. Guess I didn't make it. Get ready for me, love, cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march my heart to drum. I know nobody, no, nobody is coming. Rain and maple.
Bang, happy birthday, Babs. Martin was high kicking around the studio, weren't you?
That was... that was... Oh.
So that featured in the...
Glass of water, please.
He's exhausted. I have a theory that everyone secretly likes show tunes. They just don't like that they like them. Now, that was from Funny Girl, 1960.
Are you still saying your mental health, is it?
1968's Funny Girl, which she starred with the lovely Omar Sharif.
Never liked Omar Sharif.
No. Well, talking of never liking, one of the songs I proposed to play in honour of R. Judy was a 1963 television performance that does the rounds on social media now and again, but she appeared on Judy Garland's show, and I was like, ooh. This is a lovely mishmash of Get Happy and Happy Days Are Here Again. What else could you need on a Saturday afternoon? And Martin?
Wine. Lots of it. That's what I would need to do. I think, and I didn't like doing this.
He
but
did.
I used my veto and I said no.
Because in the words of Martin, I don't do Judy.
No.
And that led us to have been a bit of a chat about...
I don't do Judy. You say something about Judy Garland. I'm sorry, but no.
But you have never seen...
I've never seen The Wizard of Oz.
That is stunning news.
I've seen bits of it, but I've never sat down...
Well, you were a film student once, after all. You must have had to have been sat down and...
No. There's a bunch of films I haven't, but... And I should. I realise by not seeing it, I'm missing out on something which is very much embedded in popular culture. The references to it appear everywhere. And
it's probably made you heterosexual, Martin.
How dare you?
Me?
I was watching that biography film.
The David Lynch.
The David Lynch Oz, which is showing you where the Wizard of Oz turns up in all of across Lynch's work. And I thought it was a great documentary. And I could just about follow it with all the clips from The Wizard of Oz. Otherwise, I was feeling a little bilious towards the end. But I thought, should I try it one more time?
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, no. And I know it's strange. And
well,
it's,
no,
it's purely down to...
I can relate.
Why don't you tell us what you don't like? Come on.
I've got this thing about... He just sets me on edge, Michael Douglas. And the thing is, he's in some quite good films, and I have tried to watch some of them. But, for example, I've never seen those Romancing the Stone classics from the 80s.
Yeah.
I can't. He just makes me...
Basic Instinct.
Okay, I saw Basic Instinct, but I won't...
I'm going to a disco in a sweater.
Oh, it just... Oh, the idea of it...
It's a bit hot in here, isn't it?
Makes me cringe a bit. And oh, he is in, like... I've never seen Wall Street, because I'm like, oh, I can't. Well, what happened was, I went on a date as a teenager to see Fatal Attraction, which is not really... Spoilers, but it's not a date film, is it, really? And that, I think that set me on edge about him. And then I can't see him.
Who was taking you on the date on Michael Douglas?
Both. I can't be doing with it.
Right then.
But at least, so there is another one, a more recent one, so Lily James.
That's just pure...
Well, she can't... I don't get why she keeps getting all these big parts... But then she doesn't really get...
That's not me bringing Olivia Colman up every week. I've never mentioned
Lily James on... We only mention her in the pub. I wouldn't normally be broadcast. Yeah, but luckily, she's
not
in...
The show and the pub tend to merge into each other when I think.
Well, luckily, she's not been cast in that much. But a Baby Driver, I can't stand, and it's because of her simpering on the car at the end.
Yeah. I've never seen Top Gun. All the way through.
What?
They showed what? When I was doing my degree, they showed it on like a contemporary or recent American cinema module, and it was like a print watching it in the showroom, and I did about 45 minutes of it, and I walked out.
That's the best bit.
Could not stand it. All that tub thumping, you know. Stripped to the waist, look at me peck sort of thing, and I'm like, come on, we're going to go faster. And
I mean, that's the funny thing about Tom Cruise, is in real life, I find him odd and extreme. He's in a cult, you know, but
exactly
I seem
right.
to manage to...
And he's high up in that cult as well, isn't
but
he?
I seem to manage to separate him from the acting on screen, and I can still watch something with him in it, but I can't celebrate him. Do you know what I mean?
It's only in... Some films I can stand him, but I just couldn't stomach Top Gun. And you know, I was alive when that came out. And
I went to the cinema to see that. I loved it.
But if you think of what this was in the middle of the Ronald Reagan thing,
and
in this country you're in the middle of Thatcher, so I was politically. Left wing and
I can imagine hating it at the time.
It's warmongering and all of it. Oh no, just America, you know. Oh no. But I did go and see Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, I loved that too.
But I think what they'd done, I think they'd realised just how Top Gun didn't translate quite as well to a contemporary. Audience, even though you have MAGA and all that, that film definitely wasn't going for that crowd. And I think they toned down a lot of that jingoistic material that there was in the original. So I managed to sit through that one. But I can sit through some Tom Cruise films, whereas the whole Judy thing is... I did sit through one Judy Garland film I can remember sitting through, and that was like a restored version of A Star Is Born, which went on for about 2 weeks from what I can remember. I just remember sitting there thinking, when is this going to stop?
I remember getting that on DVD, and it was like, it's got all the cut scenes in it, but it's got the audio of the cut scenes and like a still photo of what you... I'm a sucker for all of the Star Is Borns, and that, of course, leads us back to Babs because she did the lovely remake with Kris Kristofferson.
Star Is Born, yes.
I also love the Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga,
Bradley Cooper.
God, all these references we've managed to drag in here, aren't we?
I've never seen another classic, and it's not to do with any like hate reasons or just can't. I just can't bring myself to get around. I've never seen 12 Angry Men.
It's only an hour and a half.
And I know it's a classic and everyone says, but just the idea of watching, I suppose, 12 Angry Men in a room, that's too much like my life.
It's only me here at the moment. So, you know.
You're like 12 Angry Men sometimes, Martin.
Oh, dear. Just because she's driving the desk this week. I was just going to remember another film I haven't seen. It's gone from my head now. But one of the things that puts me off seeing films is everyone telling me how good it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know that.
I've not seen La La Land, and Shelley used to berate me about how wonderful it was. I'm not going to see it. I don't need to go and see it.
See, I had too high expectations of La La Land, and I loved the opening of it because I thought, great, musicals are coming back. I don't think musicals can ever come back in the way that they were.
I often sit at home and smile about it.
There's just not the money and the resources, and it's not like in the old days of MGM when you had a studio production line that you could throw that at it. And that breaks my heart. But
I know
it doesn't break your
heart. It's a tissue.
Yeah, thanks. And the smallest violin in the world. Yeah. But I was disappointed by that film, but that's because I was hoping it would be something.
Well, then everyone was saying how wonderful it was. And what was the other one? I just said, I'm not going to see that out of pure malice. You know? That was the Three Billboards.
Oh, see, I like that.
I was sick and tired of being told how amazing it was.
I haven't watched June yet, or June 2, and everyone's telling me how lovely it is, and I'm like...
And I fully understand the fact now you probably won't go to see them because you're like, no, I'm fed up with it. No.
Yeah.
No. And dare I say it, that sort of thing brings out the contrarian in both of us.
It does, yeah.
Before you want to say that I'm angry and I'm always moaning, well, you should sit where I'm sitting and listen to yourself at times.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the time?
It is time for a song, isn't it? Yeah. What do you think? Well, actually, I'm going to let you introduce this one because this is Martin's show tune choice.
Well, once we sort of got off the thing where you were choosing show tunes, any show, I had to drag you back. There has to be a theme for these things when we do the music, otherwise we have songs about clowns.
Oh, my theme was birthdays.
Well, that was it.
I was just going to do wall-to-wall Babs and someone
exactly.
else.
Exactly. Yeah. And I said, no, we've had Babs, we're not doing Judy. But amazingly, there were three, you know, show tune belters whose birthday it was this weekend. And the second is Carol Burnett, who is 91 today. 91? 91. And was in Better Call Saul only recently.
That's very recent.
I've got nothing else to say about
this. I know her from like clips of 60s, 70s
comedy. I'm going to go outside and walk around for a bit, I think. for the next 2 minutes and 33 seconds? It felt like a lot more. This is her doing, everything's coming up roses.
Starting here, starting now. Honey,
come back in now. Right, you're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and on digital. And you can listen to us online via the Sheffield Live website. And that was Carol Burnett, who is 91 this week. Legendary star of American TV, film and Broadway. And that was her doing Everything's Coming Up Roses. And for me, that was like having teeth pulled without any anaesthetic. But the bleeding stopped now.
My turn to high kick. I love the show that's from Gypsy. It was a 1962 film with Rosalind Russell.
Yes.
More recently, Imelda Staunton played that part on the West End stage. That was a kind of like a smooth, almost jazz, easy listening version.
For that song, you've got to have Ethel Merman doing it.
Yeah.
And as I said to you, I do have Ethel Merman's disco album, where she does like an 8-minute version of that, which just bludgeons you into submission. Maybe we'll find some room for that in a few weeks' time.
What, more show tunes? You heard it here first, Martin Carter.
I thought if we'd play them after 1 o'clock. Right, it's that time of the show where we're going to do some reviews.
Yeah, we've had time to go to the cinema.
Amazingly. Yes, got to see some films yesterday, a couple that are just starting. So if you like the sound of them, you can get along and see them in the next week. Over to you, my dear.
The big release of the week, I guess, is Challengers. So this is Luca Guadagnino's Italian director film. It features in the lead role Zendaya as this kind of she's become a tennis coach, but she was a child prodigy player who has an injury and no longer is playing. Josh O'Connor as and Mike Faced as Patrick and Art, who are lifelong friends, and frenemies by the end of the when we join them in the film. And this has had some quite good reviews, so, you know, I might be on my own here, but I just didn't connect with it somehow. The director, I loved his Bigger Splash, which was the Tilda Swinton film set on a Greek island.
He's an incredibly sort of versatile director.
Yeah,
He's done such a broad range of films.
Yeah.
You wouldn't pin him down.
Absolutely.
The type of
so he remade Suspiria.
Suspiria. Yeah.
And Call Me By Your Name was a big hit for him.
And there's...
Big indie hit.
It's an incredible cannibal movie that he's done called Bones and All.
That is quite a difference, isn't it?
Bloody terrifying,
This is kind of a homoerotic... It's set up as if it's a menage a trois between
That's
three.
What the trailer seems to be hinting at, isn't it?
But it's really, it felt like it's Josh O'Connor and Mike Faced are meant to be together, but they're just frustratingly heterosexual. I really struggled with it. It's an interesting setup. So you've got the central time frame is in 2019 at this tennis match, and it's not an open match. So... Art has become a very successful player, but he's recovering from an injury. His pushy coach is Zendaya, Tish, his wife. But there is some kind of unresolved sexual tension between her and Patrick as well. Shock horror, he turns up as a on-the-skids, living out of his car player, although there's a hint that he might have actually got plenty of money behind him, and why is he doing this? It's got some really interesting moments in it. The music is fabulous. That's Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Mm-hmm. But the music, even though I really like the music, it felt like a 2 hour plus 80s music video at times.
Oh, God. Yeah.
There's some gorgeous photography in it. It's fun. There's fun as well to be had from it. But I just didn't get the chemistry between the three. So for me, I was like, and there's a funny shot when they're playing the tennis match, and Luca seems to be obsessed by their sweat pouring everywhere and pouring off their faces and their bodies, and there's lingering close-ups of their legs and muscly legs and as they go for shots and stuff. And there's this, you remember Hitchcock's The Lodger?
Yep.
1927. And he does, for the first time, he did that shot where the guy is pacing and you can see him above you pacing the floor, and it's like a glass for the camera to look up through. And they do that on the tennis court. And it's quite a lovely shot, and then you go, oh, but it doesn't seem to come together for me.
Well, the reason Hitchcock uses that shot in The Lodger is to let you know that the person who's looking up can hear the footsteps.
Yeah, well, there's no one underneath the tennis court, right?
Well, that's what I was trying to work out. Well, why would you...
You just did it for...
You're just doing it for doing it, aren't you? Yeah.
But so I
Lodger being a silent film, I should add. That's.
But I kind of feel like... There's something to be had for people in this film, but I just didn't get the chemistry. So for me, I it was a long watch and it was challenging, more challenging than it should have been. But I think there's something in there for other people, maybe. I don't know how to rate or slate. I can't rate.
Don't worry about other people.
Oh, I'm slating it then.
There you go then.
Yeah. Getting a slate
at last. Come on.
I might be on my own, but I'm slating it. What did you see?
Right, I went to see Kidnapped, not a new version of the Robert Louis Stevenson novel, but a new film from the veteran Italian director Marco Bellocchio. Now, Kidnapped is based on an actual event that took place in Italy when it wasn't a unified country in the 1850s. And it's about a six-year-old Jewish child who is, pretty much abducted by the papal authorities because the child's nursemaid has secretly had him baptised when he was a baby because she didn't want him to die in limbo. She wanted him to be able to be saved and to be able to go to heaven. And this sets off a whole raft of protests about what the Pope and the papacy have done. The child is virtually imprisoned and then brainwashed into the Catholic faith. And I find it quite upsetting. It's emotionally draining film. Bellocchio has made a number of highly acclaimed films, and I'm looking through his CV. I was realising I haven't seen a lot of these, so I really want to catch up on.
Oh, I love that when you get to see something and there's a whole body of work, and you're like,
all this stuff
it's passed
me
by. Yeah,
I saw one he made about 15 years ago called Good Morning Night, which was about the kidnap of the Italian Prime Minister, Aldo Moro, by the Red Brigade in the 1970s. And that was really good. And recently he did one called The Traitor, which was about a mafia family, but not like The Godfather sort of thing. It was something completely different. So this is, I would say, it doesn't paint a good picture of religion, and in this case specifically, Catholicism. You see all the ritual and the forever talking about love and that, and well, this child being abducted and held prisoner. It's a scathing indictment of as I say, organized religion and specifically Catholicism. It's beautifully shot. It goes for about 2 hours or so, but you're never bored. It feels like an old-fashioned type of film with the beautiful production values. The acting is marvellous. And I should especially point out the young actor who plays Edgardo, who is the child who's abducted at 6 years old. And I think this is his first film. If I get this right, his name is Enea Sala. And his performance is like this luminous performance he gives, where the child looks and is like baffled, bewildered, but with like almost like a sense of wonder on his face as well. It's extraordinary. And you think, you know, this film could really be mawkish and there could be moves. But And it's only, well, for me, it was 1 minute in the middle of the film where he sees his mother after, well, literally being held, after he's been held captive for several months. And it absolutely devastated me. I was sobbing like a baby. And it's done in such a sort of matter-of-fact way. And it's all down to the performances of the mother and the child. It was extraordinary.
I wonder how they get, how you manage to get such a performance from a six-year-old as well.
Yeah.
What do they...
But it's almost as though he hardly does anything. You let it sort of bounce off the child almost. But that's still very, very difficult to do. So
and to catch.
Yeah. But as I say, everything else about the film is so beautifully done. You know, and Bellocchio gets performances out of, you know, all of the cast are exemplary. And you know, the film is full of these sort of things of tragedy. And then right at the end of the film, you might be hoping for something else. It's like the final tragic note just sends you out.
Did you need tissues?
Yeah. I'm going to double rate this. It's such a marvellous film.
I'm definitely going to catch that this week then.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
That's a definite rate then.
It's a definite rate.
Excellent.
It's a rate for me.
I do have another rate.
Off you go.
Although it's difficult to recommend because I don't know how you can see it. So there was a one-off. Yeah. Look out for this one on streaming, kids, is what I'm going to say. So it's a documentary called Mr. Jimmy. And it's about this Japanese chap called Akiro Sakurai. He has been for the last 30-plus years, since he was a teenager, obsessed by Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin. And I don't just mean like likes him. Mm. I mean, literally starts off the film by saying, of course I want to be Jimmy Page. And so this filmmaker, it's directed by a chap called Peter Michael Dowd, and he follows him for a period of, I guess it's about a year, but he covers, you know, he goes back into his childhood and tries to figure out why he's this obsessed. So he basically performs as Jimmy Page in Japanese bars. He has a little, you might think it's a tribute band, but he is living Jimmy Page. There's a scene in the film where Jimmy Page himself comes to the bar and watches him play. And he's like, oh, yeah, you did that 1969 version of me doing that. So he doesn't just... So he has the equipment, the costume, the amplifier has to be done in a certain way because it has to be like it was then. He studies meticulously the performance. And when he's performing, he's not just doing, let's do some Led Zeppelin songs for people. He is... It's like performance art. He wants to get the 1970 version or the 1971 version, and he won't mix it up. And he goes on his travels to America, and his wife... It's very man heavy, this obsessive idea, I think, but also it's quite an interesting look at the cultural difference, because lots of the talking heads, or his enablers in Japan, if you like, lots of those talking heads go, well, that's obviously we are going to be like this, because we cannot be Jimmy Page, but we can be... Like, we can do this.
Yeah.
This is how we fan. This is how we obsess about things. And he goes to America and, like, he joins a tribute band called Led Zeppelin. Totally tells them they're doing it wrong and tells them how to do it right. And they're like, we just want to do the hits, man. So there's also this bit where he splits up from the tribute band for musical differences. But it's a really heartwarming tale.
Yeah.
And I'm giving that a definite recommend.
Excuse me for asking, but you know, so when Jimmy Page goes to see him in the bar, is that the first time he's met Jimmy Page?
Yeah, he never meets him again.
So that must have been an incredible experience for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a tiny little downstairs basement bar, It was, fascinating film, though. I hope it comes out on... I think it was made about 4 or 5 years ago.
I looked it up yesterday when you mentioned it to me, and it's about 5 years old.
Yeah, and I think they took a long time. I think it came out in America in, like, autumn, just gone. And I think it took them a long time to get the rights, but all of the music is in there, and there's other incidental music as well.
Because Led Zeppelin are very tight on giving out the rights to their music to be used in films.
Yeah. Well, I have a little bit of a mental block with Led Zeppelin. I was working in a record shop, but when Remasters came out, I was working in a record shop, and my manager played it every single Saturday, and it's about 5 years long. And so for a long time, I couldn't touch Led Zeppelin, and I got over that to watch this film, and I've actually played some Led Zeppelin this week for the first time of my own accord.
Yeah. It was that TV series, Sharp Objects, that was on a few years back, with Patricia Clarkson and that. And I think that was the first time Led Zeppelin had given the rights to some of their songs to be played. And the last 2 minutes of that entire series are the most extraordinary 2 minutes of TV I've seen in years. And I can't remember the name of the track now, but that's a Led Zeppelin track, and everything unravels in this 2 minutes. What?
It's like with Led Zeppelin, I know they're great.
Yeah.
But I know they're great because I've been told by men for decades that they are. It's a bit like my Martin Scorsese thing. I found when I was finding out about music in the 90s and film in the 90s, it's just there's a lot of misogyny around those, and that gave me the ick. And then hearing them every Saturday for a season was too much.
The Hammer of the Gods, which is just about what they, not so much what they did on stage, but what they did backstage as soon as
it's vile. But that film, definitely a rate for me. If you see it streaming at some point soon,
give it
a look. Did we see anything else this week? I'm just going to give a brief mention to a film that I saw this week that was interesting. And when I said to somebody that I was going to go and see this film, they were suffering from a migraine at the time, and they looked at me when I said, I'm going to see a film tonight called Sometimes I Think About Dying. And they looked at me as if to say, well, I've got a migraine and I'm happier where I am than when you're
going. I'm living it, baby. I'm living it.
But it was this... So Daisy Ridley's in this film, and she plays a sort of socially awkward on some kind of neurodiverse spectrum, maybe, or just painfully shy. She's worked in this Port Authority office for ages. And sometimes she thinks about dying rather than... it's not suicidal. Mm. It's just... There's some beautiful imagery of the places that she thinks of herself and sees her dead body in. It's an interesting film. It's one of those films that might be better if it was in foreign, because I'd feel like I could I could be more worthy.
It's been Swedish or something, isn't it?
It kind of lost me a little bit towards the end and the relationships in it, but it's still worth checking out, I think.
Okay. All right.
That's our reviews for the week.
That's the reviews for the week. And now to our piece of music, and it's the great Shirley MacLaine. I do love Shirl. Kubelik wise, and
Miss Fran Kubelik,
and it was her birthday this week. She's 90.
She could be 90.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this is Remember Me.
I've wanted to do a show like this all my life. I don't know what took me so long. I guess I just had a whole lot of other stuff I had to get done first, you know. I started in the chorus of Pajama Game. The leading lady took a fall, they called my name. On Carol Haney's broken leg, I rode to fame. Remember me. In Hollywood, my parts were very small. And then I played the type of girl who was on call. 4 Oscar nominations and I lost them all. Remember me. I can see my brother Warren Beatty on my knee. At the age of 3, even then I could see he was prettier than me. I climbed the Himalayas and I took a look. And China was another of the trips I took. Seems every time I take a trip, I write a book. Remember me.
You don't know who the hell I am, do you? If I'd done Hollywood Squares, would this be easier? In Tokyo, I learned this game called Rub-a-Dub, where men and women bathe together in a tub. And who's the dope who dropped the soap and closed the club? Why do I remember you? In Washington, my name was on the enemy list. Because I was a Democrat, they slapped my wrist. The candidate we needed was the exorcist. Remember me. When the Klan was dominating every scene, I was there with Sammy, Peter, Frank, and Dean. I love to be a spirit free as Peter Pan, to live and love and learn and do the best I can. And now I'm back upon the stage where I began, the place I want to be. Remember.
Birthday, Shirley MacLaine.
I like that one. Unbelievably.
And if you wanted a potted history of her career and life up to 1976, it's all in that live performance in New York.
How succinct is that?
And just the right side of self-deprecating and, I know I'm good. She has such confidence, I think, as well, of like, I mean, she's led a really interesting life outside of
filmmaking. She's done nearly 70 years in show business. Yeah. You know, you've got to... Well, you know, wow. So, what's starting next week?
Well, I am thoroughly, 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 thoroughly excited about The Fall Guy. But I can't see it till Sunday.
I'll tell you the ending next Saturday when you're on it.
Yeah, I'm not. No spoilers in the reviews, guys. I can't see it till Sunday. I'm going to go and see it on IMAX. I am so excited about this film. Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt, they are so funny together.
Yeah, I like
them. All their publicity for the show, for the film. Like, they were on Saturday Night Live a couple of weeks ago. He was the guest and she was on his opening monologue. They're great. I don't care if it's bad, it's going to be good.
That's sort of next week's biggish film, isn't it? It is equally interesting indie film. It's the second film by the British director Rose Glass, who nearly 4 or 5 years ago now released Saint Maud.
The floaty girl.
Yeah,
floaty
now,
mad girl.
The trailer for this looks. It looks like a nasty little neo-noir with Kristen, not Kirsten, Stewart.
I get me Kristens and Kirstens right next
me
up,
too.
I do.
I'm all over the place with them. looking at it and looking at some of the images, there's a bit of a Coen Brothers twist to this. And there's one shot in the trailer, which is very, very blood simple, and I'll just leave that with you. But the thing that strikes me most in the trailer, Ed Harris looks absolutely terrifying in it. And let's just say, has there ever been a bad Ed Harris performance?
I don't think so.
There's been some bad
films.
There's been some
bad films. There's definitely been some bad films.
But whenever Ed's on in them, you think, this ain't too bad, this. And then you have to step back again. This looks... Sod the Fall Guy. I'm going to see Love Flies Bleeding.
Oh, there's
next
so much.
Week.
I also want to catch star of Harry Potter, Ralph Fiennes, and Indira Varma. There's a screenings of Macbeth this week.
Yes,
Which
she's
looks
great,
fab.
Indira Varma.
Yeah.
She's a marvellous actor.
But we want to give out a little shout out to our friend Mel, friend of the show, who has put on a special screening at the showroom on Friday, the 3rd of May. So this Friday. It's Terrorvision on VHS. Now, I don't know much about the film. I've seen the trailer. It's a bizarre cosmic accident producing an oozing tentacle creature projecting itself out of television sets and eating its viewers. That sounds like a Friday night.
That sounds like one of Mel's films.
It sounds like a Mel film, yeah. Mm. So that's what's coming up.
Okay, so we're rounding up, aren't we?
Yeah.
And I managed to get one choice in this week on the musical. But I stuck to what the theme of the week was and didn't go down the show tunes cul-de-sac.
Hey, I just want to, for the record, you could have picked anything from Carol Burnett and you picked a show tune. All
because
right.
because I knew you would have you would have thrown it back in my face. So, this week, one of the last birthday is Meister of German electronic music, Giorgio Moroder. He who
We'll always be together.
No, oh, what's her name? Oh God, I've had a brain melt. Oh, Donna Summer.
I feel love. Yeah.
I feel love, and this track has got a very I feel love vibe to it. But coming back to cinema, this is from the score for Midnight Express, which I believe they're doing a Broadway show version of.
Bringing it back to theatre.
And this is Chase from Midnight Express. Have a lovely week, everyone. Mm-hmm.